The final Mishnah of the Perek is really the final Mishnah of the 9 Perokim that have discussed the laws of earthenware utensils, clay cheres. And this Mishnah really does bring together quite a few of the principles that we have learnt in the last 9 Perokim. Lefosin zobesich zo, if there are earthenware pots, one inside of the other. So there's one larger pot, inside that there is another pot which is slightly smaller, and there's another pot inside of that which is slightly smaller. And their rims reach an equal height, they're all in line with each other. If a sheretz, one of the small dead animals that the Torah lists as being a source of impurity, if that is found in either the highest or lowest pot, the highest pot would obviously be the innermost pot, which is resting on top of the base of all of the other pots, so therefore it's going to be the highest. Even though the rim reaches an equal level to the other pots, but it starts at the highest level, and the lowest refers to the outer pot. So if a sheretz is found either in the most outer pot or the most inner pot, or in any of the pots in between them, he tamea, that pot itself would become tome, because there is a source of impurity within its airspace. However, v'chulon tahoreis, all of the other pots would remain pure, because an earthenware utensil can only become tome if a source of impurity enters into its airspace. And since the rims of all of these pots reaches the same level, so the airspace of each of them is considered to be its own airspace. In addition to that, even if there is food or liquid inside one of these utensils, that will also not become tome, because of toich toichai, that it's inside of a kli, which is inside of a different earthenware utensil, which has become tome. And essentially this is the same idea, that it's in a different airspace to the airspace where the sheretz is found, and therefore it would not become tome. Now these earthenware pots are examples of kalim that are used for both liquids and solids, foods. And we've seen in a couple of Mishnahs already that because of that, if, for example, a hole develops in the kli, so in general, the size of the hole that needs to exist in order to take away the status of a kli from that item is one that allows either food or liquid to go through that hole, depending on what the kli is used for. But something which is used for both liquids and foods, we go stringently. Now, what exactly does it mean to go stringently? Sometimes it's considered to be more stringent for something to be considered a kli. If it's not a kli, it can't become tome. If it is a kli, then it can become tome. On the other hand, there are certain scenarios where it's considered to be a stringency not to be a kli. For example, with regards to toich toichai. Toich toichai, where something is within a different kli inside of another kli, that only applies if it's inside of a actual kli. So in that case, it will be considered a stringency not to be a kli. So the Mishnah says, Hubachonis Mashke, if each of these earthenware pots had a hole in it which is large enough to allow liquid to come through. So that's the smaller hole. It doesn't allow foods to get through, but allowed liquids to come in. So if we rule stringently, that means that if it's a stringency for the item to be considered a kli, then we'll consider it a kli. If it's a stringency for it not to be considered a kli, then we're going to consider it not to be a kli. As long as in the same case, there's not going to be a contradiction. And because of that, the Mishnah says, "Asheretz bol yoina, if a sheretz, a small dead animal which is a source of impurity, is found in the highest pot, that means the innermost pot, then kulon tomeis, all of the earthenware utensils, all of these pots are going to become tome. That innermost pot itself is going to be tome because we're stringent and we view it as a kli, which can become tome. What about with regards to the other pots? So here we see something very interesting. When we judge each pot in and of itself, let's say we're looking at the outermost pot. So in terms of that pot itself, we need to decide, okay, we're going to be stringent over here. And the only way that that outermost pot can become tome is if we consider that pot to be a kli, but we look at the innermost pot as if it's not a kli. If the innermost pot is a kli, then there'll be the concept of toich toich over here, that the source of impurity is inside the airspace of a kli, which is inside the other earthenware utensil, and then it wouldn't become tome. However, if we're able to view that innermost pot as not being a kli, and the outer pot as being a kli, then the outermost pot would become tome. And this, according to the Mishnah, is not considered to be a contradiction. We look at each pot in and of itself, and when we're judging the outermost pot, so we say that in order to make this tome, we need to look at this as the outer pot as being a kli, and the innermost pot as not being a kli, and we're able to do that. Even though when we're coming to define the law with regards to the innermost pot, we do view the innermost pot as a kli. But we can look at each kli in and of itself, each pot in and of itself, and base its status on what is going to be the most stringent law. On the other hand, if the sheretz is found batachtoina in the lowest pot, meaning in the outermost pot, then hitameya, the outermost pot, will become tomei. We're stringent and we view it as a kli that can become tomei, but for kulon tahiris, all of the other utensils are tohar. And the explanation of this is quite simple. If we look at all of the other pots as having the status of a kli, so then that means that we have toich toich over here. The airspace inside of there is considered to be a separate airspace to that which is outside of it. So the tumah doesn't affect those other inner pots, and if we don't view them as having the status of a kli, so then obviously they can't become tomei, because something which is not a kli can't become tomei. Now what would happen if there is food or liquid inside one of the inner pots? They would become tomei. Why? Because stringently we view the pot itself in which the food is placed as not being a kli, whereas the outermost pot we view as a kli, which means that this is considered to be in the airspace of the kli which has a sheretz in. There's no protection of toich toichoi, because stringently we don't view the inner pots as being a kli. So that food and liquid would become tomei. Now with Jabonon, we know that tomei liquid can make a earthenware utensil tomei. So seemingly it will emerge that the inner pots will indeed become tomei in this case, where there is food, where there's liquid inside of them. But in truth, the inner pots will not become tomei, even if there is liquid inside of them, because then it would really be a contradiction. Because the only reason why the liquid becomes tomei is because we view that pot itself as not being a kli, and therefore there is no concept of toich toichoi. So we're not able to now say that we're going to look at it as a kli to become tomei via that same liquid, which only became tomei because we viewed that pot as not being a kli. That would indeed be a contradiction. And therefore, even if there is liquid inside of that pot, of the inner pots, and therefore the liquid did become tomei, the pot itself would not become tomei, as explained. The next case of the Mishnah is where Hasheretz Boel Yoina, the sheretz is found in the highest, the most inner pot, the smallest pot, the one in the middle, Vatach Toinoi Defes, and in this case, the lowest pot, meaning the outermost pot, has an extra height, meaning the height of the rim of the outer pot reaches higher than the inner pot's rims. Because of that, we view the inner pot as being within the airspace of the most outer pot, because its rim doesn't reach the top of the rim of the outer pot. And because of that, hiva tachtona tomeya, the outermost and the innermost pot will become tomei. The innermost pot, obviously, because there's a sheretz inside of it, and the outermost pot becomes tomei because the innermost pot is considered to be inside the same airspace. That having been said, any other pots in between them would not become tomei, because their rims are in line with the innermost pot's rim, and therefore their airspace does not combine with that airspace which has the sheretz inside. Continues the Mishnah, if in an identical case where we have Boel Yoina, the sheretz is found in the highest, the innermost pot, Vatachtoinoi Defes, and the rim of the lowest, the outermost pot, is higher than the other rims. And now the Mishnah adds, Kol sheyesh b'mashke toifeach, any of the pots which have any liquid inside of them, tameo, they'll become tomei, because their airspace combines with the airspace of the outermost pot. Although it doesn't combine with the airspace of the innermost pot, because their rims are at equal height, each of the airspaces by themselves is attached and combines with the airspace of the outermost pot. And since in this case the outermost pot became tomei as a result of the sheretz which was inside the innermost pot, so the liquids inside any of these pots would become tomei, and midrabanon, they would make the pot in which the liquid is situated tomei, because midrabanon, tomei liquid, makes a kli tomei. Parakut Aleph Mishnah Aleph. The next four parakim talk about the next category of utensils, klematchos, metal utensils. And just like we learnt with regards to earthenware kelim, that there are certain laws which are unique to those type of kelim, this perek opens up with a law which is unique to metal kelim, and that is that klematchos, metal utensils, pshutein umekablein tmein. Both metal items which are flat and ones which can contain things are able to become tomei. Although with regards to the vast majority of kelim, they're only considered to have the status of a kli if they're able to hold things, if they have at least some sort of rim around them. However, metal kelim can become tomei, and they're considered to be a kli even if they're not able to hold things like liquids inside of them. The next Mishnah is going to add a particular condition for when exactly that is the case, but this is still a unique law to metal kelim. An additional law which applies uniquely to metal items, midrabbonon, is as follows. Nishbaro, if the metal kli breaks, then just like all kalim which break, once it breaks, it loses the status of a kli, and it would thereby also lose its tumah. Toheru, they would become tohar. They would become pure. Now says the Mishnah, chozar v'osamem kli, if he went back and used that same metal to make it into a new kli, which once again would now have the status of a kli, it goes back to its original tumah that it used to have. So if a metal item touched a sheretz, for example, and then it broke, and then it was made into a new metal item, it would be tomei, once again, on the level that it was tomei before it had broken. And we're going to see three different reasons, or really a three-way argument, as to what was the reason for the Rabbanon when they instituted this law. According to this opinion of the Mishnah, the reason for this is because the typical way for purifying a kli is by placing it into a mikveh, a collection of natural water. Although if the item became tomei from a dead body, then it has to go through a more lengthy purification process. It's not enough just to put it in the mikveh. It also has to be sprinkled with the solution which contains the ashes from a parah adumah, a particular red cow. That has to happen twice as part of a 7-day purification process, at the end of which the item will be placed in the mikveh. But as it may, this is the classic way which the Torah prescribes for purifying an item which has become tomei, either by dipping it into the mikveh, or if it became tomei from a dead body, then going through that additional procedure. Apart from that, there's also a law that if the kli stops being a kli at all, if it breaks, then it loses its tumah. But that's not the way to purify the utensil. That's a way that the tumah is lost. Specifically with regards to earthenware utensils, we learnt that they cannot be purified in a mikveh, and the only way for them to be purified is if they break. But with regards to the vast majority of kalim, they can be dipped in the mikveh or go through that 7-day process and become tohar even without breaking them. And there's a fundamental difference between these two ways of the item becoming tohar. If it becomes tohar via the purification process which the Torah prescribes by dipping it into the mikveh or by going through the 7-day process, then even once that procedure has been fulfilled, it's been dipped into the mikveh, during the rest of that day until nightfall, the item still remains tomei on a small level. It retains a part of that tumah, that impurity that it had, and only once nightfall is reached would it be fully tahar. On the other hand, if the kli broke and it stopped being a kli at all, so there's no need to wait, it's no longer tomei. Now, if he would then take those pieces which broke and make it into a new kli, mid-oraisa, on a Torah level, according to the strict letter of the law, that is now a kli, which is pure. It's a new kli, it does not have the original tumah, and it's not considered tomei at all. The Rabbanon were concerned that people will confuse these two methods of purification, and upon seeing that people treat the kli after it broke and was repaired on the very same day as fully tahar, they will assume that the same law applies to a kli which was purified in a mikveh or via the 7-day purification process, that it's fully tahar on that same day. And in order to avoid people coming to that incorrect conclusion, midrabbanon, they decreed that even once you repair it, it still has its original tumah, and therefore you would need to dip it into the mikveh, and people would know that they need to wait until nightfall in order for it to be fully tahar. Rabbi Shimon ben Gamliel says that actually there's an entirely different reason for the rabbinic law that the status which the kli originally had returns once the kli is repaired. And based on that reason, lo lekol tumah, it doesn't apply to any tumah, elo l'tumas hanefesh, but only if the kli became tomei from a dead body. Only in that case, if it broke and then was repaired, would it still be considered tomei. And the reason for this is because the Rabbanon were concerned that it's true that if you just have to dip an item into a mikveh to purify it, that's much easier than breaking it and then making it into a new utensil. But if a person has a choice to go through a 7-day purification procedure and having to obtain the solution to sprinkle on the item, he's got a choice between doing that or breaking the item and repairing it immediately, and he'll be able to use it straight away. People would certainly rather the second option. And the Rabbanon were concerned that people would stop using this solution at all to purify items which had become tomei. And that entire concept would be forgotten. It would be almost abolished. People would no longer use that procedure which the Torah prescribes because they would have this much easier solution, and because of that, midrabbanon, even once it is repaired, they would still have to go through that purification process in order that it not be forgotten and people stop using it. Mishnah Beis, although we learned in the previous Mishnah that even a flat piece of metal is able to become Tomei, that's not to say that any piece of metal, anything made out of metal, can become Tomei even if it hasn't got the status of a Kli. Even the metal, in order to become Tomei, it has to have the status of a Kli. It's just that it's able to be considered a Kli even if it can't hold things inside of it. And the Mishnah elaborates slightly on what exactly is needed for this to be considered a Kli. Kol Kli Matreis Sheyesh Lo Shem Bifnei Atzmei. Any flat piece of metal that has a name in and of itself. Meaning it's something which is used by itself, it's not considered to be a individual part of a larger item, such that when people identify it, they call it by a name based on it being part of something bigger. For example, if a window has metal bars on the outside of it, one doesn't identify it by calling it a bar. You'd call it a bar which is part of the metal frame outside of the window. And that's a sign that the bar is not something which is useful in and of itself, but only as part of the larger frame of metal outside of the window. So something like that would not be able to come tome by itself. Only if it's a flat item which can be used in and of itself, and has its own function by itself, only then would it be able to be considered a kli and be able to become tome. And now the Mishnah lists a few exceptions of metal items which cannot become tomei, chutz min adeles, except for a door, or min haneger, or a door stopper made out of metal, or min hamanel, or a lock on the door which is made out of metal, v'hapesosh techas atzer, or a kind of mini hole in the ground, like a socket, underneath a bit at the bottom of a door which protrudes downwards like a mini pole, and that pole would be placed into that mini hole, that socket in the ground, in order for the door to turn around instead of hinges. That's how the door would swivel around. That's here, and this mini pole itself, which comes out of the door and goes into the socket in the ground, v'hakira, and a beam onto which the door shuts, v'hatsinor, and a pipe, all of these things, if they are made out of metal, if they're not made out of metal, so obviously they can't become tome because they're all flat, but if they are made out of metal, even then they're not able to become tome, shenasu lakarka, because they are made for the ground, meaning they are attached to the ground, or something which itself is attached to the ground, for example, it's part of the house, which has the status of the ground since it's attached to it, and anything which is attached to the ground and considered secondary to the ground cannot become tome and cannot have the status of a kli. Mr. Gimel, if somebody finds a item made out of metal, even if it's broken, and he then fixes it, he needs to be concerned that it came from a metal item which had become tome. And even if it broke on the way before he found it, it would, midrabbanon, still be considered tome. And therefore, if somebody finds a metal item, he needs to be concerned for that possibility, and he would need to purify it in a mikveh before using it. However, there are certain types of metal which one finds that he can be sure was not ever tomei. Ha'oisa kelim na'eshe, somebody who makes kelim from iron ore. This is the natural metal in its original state. So at that point, it was never a kli yet. So obviously it never became tomei. Min ha'charora, or from a charora, it literally means a cake. This refers to a round piece of metal. Before making metal items from the original metal state that it was in, the first stage is to turn it into a round piece of metal, so even at that point it was never considered a kli, and therefore it couldn't have become tome yet. Umin asovishal galgal, from a piece of metal that surrounds a wooden wheel, that also is something which is not able to become tome because it's secondary to a different utensil. A kli whose entire purpose is to serve a different kli cannot become tome. Umin atasin, or if he makes it from a sheet of metal, minatzipuyin, or from a metal coating, mikane kelim, from the base of a different utensil. Once again, this is a kli which is serving a different kli, so it itself cannot become tome. Ume ogne kelim, from a metal rim at the top of a different kli, ume ozne kelim, or a metal handle of other kelim. Again, all of these things are there to serve a different kli, and therefore it itself is not significant enough to become tome. Minashchiles, if he makes the metal utensil using metal shavings, which came off of a piece of metal as the metal was being formed into a kli, minagereides. This also refers to metal shavings. Shecheles is possibly slightly larger pieces of metal which were cut off in the process of making a metal kli. Either way, all of these metal items were never able to become tomei, and therefore, if somebody turned that metal into a kli tahirin, they would be tahar. He does not need to be concerned that they ever became tomei, because they were not yet able to become tomei. Now, Rechman Nuri says, Afmanak Tzitzes, even if he makes the kli from metal which was cut off from a different metal kli as it was being made. This is again similar to Shchoyos and Gereides, but over here the pieces are much larger. According to Rechman Nuri, if somebody used those pieces to make a metal item, he does not need to be concerned at all for any tumah, even though these metal pieces are large enough and significant enough for them to have become tomei. And the reason for Rabbi Yochanan is because he actually holds of a third reason for this rabbinic stringency that we view the item as being tomei with its original tumah that it had before it broke. And that is that the Rabbanim were concerned that when a person breaks the item in order to purify it, he wouldn't break it fully, then it would be very hard to repair it. Rather, he would make a hole in it, a hole which is wide enough to reduce its functionality. But the Rabbanim were concerned that he wouldn't make a hole which is large enough. So you would think that he actually made the kli tahar, but in reality, the hole was not large enough to make it tahar. And that's the reason why the Rabbanon said that the item, even once it's repaired, will still be tomei, and he has to purify it in a mikveh. Now, according to that, this would not apply to pieces of metal which were cut off. Here, we're not discussing a case where somebody made a hole in it or anything, and therefore in this case, the rabbinic stringency would not apply. What happens if somebody makes metal items, mishivrei kelim, from broken metal kelim, mina grutim, or from pieces of metal kelim which fell off, or mina masmeris shiodua shnasu mekelim, or from metal nails which came off of metal kelim? So even if in these cases one is not sure whether the item was tomei or tahar, since there's a possibility that it was tomei, and these are all items which could have become tomei, so tomein, the item which he made anew, would be tomei midrabanon, and you need to dip it into a mikveh. Min hamasmerais ends off the Mishnah. If somebody makes a metal kli from metal nails, and he's unsure whether the nails came from a kli, in which case the nails themselves would have become tomei, or whether the nails were never part of a kli, rather they'd just been made into nails from the original metal state that they were in which case they were not yet able to become tomei. Nails by themselves cannot become tomei. So Bishamai say that he has to be concerned that it is tomei, because there's a possibility that it came from nails which were attached to a kli. But Rishil Notarin, Rishil say that he does not need to be concerned that it is tomei, and this is based on the concept of Sfek Sfeiko, where there is a double doubt. There's a doubt as to whether the nails came from nails which were attached to a kli, and even if they did come from a kli, we don't even know if that kli became tomei or not. So we don't need to be concerned doubly to such an extent, and therefore, according to Beis Hillel, he can safely assume that those nails are not tahar, and automatically the kli that he made from those nails would be able to be considered tahar.